From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty with the news on this day in Maine, Wednesday, May 15th, 2019.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners like you and by Diversions Puzzles and Games, committed to offering fun, social, and technology-free ways to connect at Hannaford Plaza by Main Mall and DiversionsGames.com, and by Red Zone Wireless, providing a local alternative for broadband throughout Maine. Learn more at RedZoneWireless.com.
A legislative committee gave a tepid approval today to a measure that could effectively kill Central Maine Power's controversial proposal for a high-voltage transmission line through western Maine. Fred Bever has details.
As amended, the bill would require approval from two-thirds of municipalities that would host high-impact transmission projects, such as CMP's billion-dollar 141-mile power line. It would also require tangible benefits to the state of significantly higher value than what CMP has offered. The utility first applied for state permits in 2017. To ensure that municipalities would be able to weigh in now, Representative Christina Riley, a Jay Democrat who sits on the legislature's Joint Utilities Committee, says the measure should be retroactive.
I know that my constituents are furious about this, and I think that the pending piece of legislation is imperfect, but it answers to the concerns of my constituents.
Some Jay residents are calling on the local select board to rescind its initial support for the project, just as more than a dozen host communities have already done. But some committee members say it's unfair to change the rules of the game midstream, which would send a bad message to the business community. Representative Chris Chiazzo is a Scarborough Democrat.
We're constantly moving goalposts around and we're constantly changing rules. The impact of that, and we will never hear about it directly. People just will not come and do business in this state.
The committee voted to recommend the measure to the full legislature on a vote of 7-5. It will get its first votes in the House. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Fred Bever.
And for the first time in 50 years, there's regular bus service between Farmington and Lewiston. The Green Line commuter route includes 4 round trips a day. Maine Labor Commissioner Laura Fortman says it'll benefit employers trying to fill jobs and workers who want to fill them but who either can't drive or can't afford a car.
A major challenge for workers is transportation, so this is one more piece that allows workers to get to and from work in a reliable, safe, convenient way.
A one-way trip between Farmington and Lewiston costs $5. It's estimated the average cost of driving the same route is about $11,000 a year. That's more than twice what taking the bus costs. In weather tonight, overcast skies with lows in the mid-30s to mid-40s. Tomorrow, mostly sunny everywhere but the south, where we'll have a little bit of sun, isolated showers in the afternoon. The Maine House yesterday failed to muster a two-thirds vote for a constitutional amendment that would allow ranked choice voting to be used for gubernatorial and legislative elections. A proposal to amend the Maine Constitution to outlaw discrimination on the basis of gender seems to be doomed. The Maine House voted 87-54 yesterday to support the amendment. But again, that is short of the two-thirds needed in both chambers to get it to the voters. And Maine lawmakers have passed a bill calling for public hearings on citizen initiatives before they head to the ballot. The bill would require that certified initiatives receive a public hearing in front of a legislative committee. It heads now to Governor Mills' desk for a signature. Now, if you are like many people of a certain age, you may view video gaming as little more than brain-numbing escapism and as time better spent outdoors in nature or playing sports. But consider this. Denmark's National Ministry of Culture last month released its first official strategic plan on competitive video gaming, citing its economic, cultural, and career potential. In fact, a growing number of colleges and universities, including two in Maine, have launched their first ever esports programs, which pit gamers against each other in the virtual arena. Jennifer Mitchell has more.
Oh, watch out, dynamite! No way, again? Oh, I'm so sick of this. I'm so sick of getting hit by dynamite. And we got other people landing here.
Getting
now.
Dynamited there in a 2-on-2 match of the popular survival game Fortnite is the player known as Hurricane Maine, known to his parents as Ryan Hemingway. He's soon to be Ryan Hemingway with a Master's of Business Administration from Thomas College in Waterville. But he might just decide to play games for a living instead.
And they got dynamite. Why does everyone have dynamite?
Ideally, I'd like to. I mean, right now I stream on Twitch, YouTube, etc. So I'm dabbling in it.
Hemingway is a member of the school's first ever esports team. It's also the first in Maine and one of just about 120 around the U.S. Nationally, Hemingway is one of the top 20 Fortnite players in the country on the PlayStation platform, and he's the top-ranked player in New England across all platforms. In the world of esports, that's a bit like being a top draft pick for the NFL. His abilities could attract the attention of a recruiter, earn an invitation to join an international team, or even earn him sponsors.
His teammates are behind you.
I've gotten some success with it, not the level that I want to achieve, but it's a grind, so you just got to keep at it. Growth is slow, but it does happen if you're committed to the process. I'm not anticipating stopping doing this anytime soon. As I've told myself, as soon as it stops being fun, that's when I'll stop doing it.
Oh, I just missed my shot.
If the last game you played took quarters or involved running around a maze, you might be unfamiliar with the modern world of esports. But here's what you need to know. The games are often MOBA, multiplayer online battle arenas, or real-time strategy games, or battle royale games, which involve elements of survival, scavenging, and outlasting a number of opponents. Things might blow up. Teamwork is a must. Some popular games, such as Hearthstone, are basically souped-up digital versions of old-fashioned tabletop card games like Magic the Gathering or Dungeons & Dragons. The games can be watched and called live, just like football or hockey games. But to know what's going on, you'll need to learn the gaming parlance.
You should ping your bot lane. Is this a normal?
Yeah.
Oh, solid.
There's no official central governing body for esports. No set seasons, no holy grail trophy, or decades-old game rules. In fact, the gameplay can change significantly with the release of a software update from the developer. The games are chosen largely by how popular they happen to be, and if there are enough players to form leagues. And yes, schools call the players athletes, but there really isn't much organization yet.
Anyone who is currently in esports at the collegiate level is a trailblazer. You have something that is just completely sort of fly by the seat of your pants, and there are no standards yet. I mean, you're creating the rules. You're creating the model as you go.
Martin Shalazine is Thomas's esports coach.
If he's at your ready, you should go steal his Gromp. And you don't have to smite him on.
Now, just in his mid-20s, Shalazine has already played World of Warcraft professionally under corporate sponsorship, retired from international competition, and graduated from high school in that order. He now coaches, with specialty in the game League of Legends. While gaming as an organized college sport is still largely in flux, Shalazine says it's an industry that's already creating jobs.
I would say at this point, anyone who doesn't see it as a legitimate career path just doesn't understand the industry. You're looking at a multi-billion dollar industry with thousands upon thousands of jobs that range from everything from broadcasting, coaching, playing, you name it, there's some section of the esports industry that needs it. And so professional opportunity is undeniable.
You must locate and defuse a bomb.
And a second main school appears to agree. About an hour down the road at Central Maine Community College in Auburn, students are filling a brand new esports arena, practicing their skills at Rainbow Six Siege, Counter-Strike, and other games. CMCC will launch its own esports team in the fall, but it's now also piloting Maine's first ever esports-focused degree, esports management, which has attracted more than 20 applicants so far. Program creator Margaret Brewer says she's observed high growth rates in participation, brand investment, and marketing. She says it became clear that the school should respond.
So as a business instructor, I said, well, what can we do to help support this industry? What can we bring the people of Maine and future students? If you tell someone what sports management is, most people have heard of that and they know what that is. This is just esports management, and it delves into that growing side.
My name's Mallory Mercier. I'm coming here for liberal studies right now, but I'm thinking about changing to esports management soon.
So what is it about that makes you think that might possibly be a good career path for you?
Just the amount of time I spend thinking about it and like learning more about it on my own. I enjoy it, which is like, I could talk to you for hours about esports, but I can't really hold a conversation about my English class. That's kind of how I see it.
Mercier says managing a professional esports player would be something she could be passionate about, assuming she doesn't turn pro herself. She's planning to try out for the team in the fall and compete in Fortnite Battle Royale. But in order to make the squad, she's going to have to impress CMCC's new esports coach, Zach Kimball.
So how is recruitment going? Has there been interest?
Oh, there's been plenty of interest. Oh my goodness. Every game there's at least 30 people.
Kimball says he's planning 2 to 3 hour practice sessions, including health and nutrition requirements, which he says are just as important for an e-athlete as it is for someone chasing a ball. But is anyone actually watching these matches as they'd turn out for a Saturday afternoon college football game? Kimball says yes. The 2017 NHL Stanley Cup Final attracted about 29 million total viewers. In 2018, he says the Super Bowl attracted about 98 million viewers. And for the League of Legends World Championship, Kimball says,
League of Legends alone, which is not even just included all of esports, had like 200 million. Yeah, it's going to be huge.
For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Jennifer Mitchell.
And NASA announced last month that astronaut Jessica Meir, who grew up in Caribou, Maine, has been selected to take part in her first space flight this fall. A scientist by training, Meir holds a master's in space studies, a doctorate in marine biology, and has been training this year for her mission to the International Space Station. As Meir told Maine Calling, Cindy Hahn, her childhood in northern Maine helped her develop an interest in the outdoors and gave her a clear view of the night sky.
I remember a lot of times going out either in the backyard or going somewhere where we had a good view of the stars and gazing up and seeing the thick Milky Way. And that was another thing. I didn't realize how fortunate we were, how lucky we were to have that view without a lot of light pollution up there, you know, without any big cities close by. And that was something, you know, I grew up with the stars looking that way, so I didn't really realize that not everybody has that privilege. So maybe that has something to do with leading me to where I am today.
Right. I actually wanted to find out about that because I did hear that you wanted to be an astronaut from a really young age, like 5 years old.
Yeah, that's right. My mom tells me I started saying I wanted to be an astronaut when I was 5. And then my first distinct memory of it was when I was in first grade and we were asked to draw a picture of what we wanted to be when we grew up. And I drew a picture of an astronaut in a spacesuit standing on the surface of the moon with a flag and then pretty much said it ever since then.
I wanted to find out more about training. You're right in the heat of training right now. What does that mean? What do you do and how intense is it?
We are always training as astronauts, really from day one when we start our careers here. So when we first arrived, we had 2 years of what we call astronaut candidate training. So that's kind of like basic training for astronauts, everything from flight training to how to use the spacesuit, how to fly the robotic arm on the space station, Russian language training, since everybody on the space station has to speak both English and Russian, and then training about all the different space station systems, so the electrical system, the thermal control system, the life support system, that kind of thing. Then we have a lot of other things interspersed in there, leadership training, analog type training where we live in other extreme environments underwater or in a cave. I had the chance to do both of those things, which were really amazing. And then we also work normal jobs here at Johnson Space Center before we get our first flight assignment, where we'll work in mission control, we'll be a representative on a certain board, and we take turns doing different jobs in that capacity. Then when we do have our first flight assignment, we enter what's called mission specific training. But the thing that's unique now for me, and this is something that I started actually last January, so January of 2018, I started training in Russia. And so that is because I'm going to be flying up on the Soyuz rocket, the Russians' mm-hmm. rocket and spacecraft. So that most of my last year was really spent over there in Russia. I am going to be the co-pilot of the Soyuz. So there are three people in each Soyuz. There's the Russian commander. Then there's a left seater who is basically the co-pilot helping the commander out with everything. And then there's the right seater as well. And I actually am going to be the co-pilot in the left seat. So I have a lot more training over there than I would if I were in the right seat.
So for the training, what sort of physical condition do you need to be at? It just seems like physically it's so demanding.
Yeah, as astronauts, we do have a lot of medical requirements, and that's something that begins even before we're selected. And then afterward, when we get here, you know, being fit is, of course, really important. It's even more important when we are in space, since without the constant loading on our bones and our muscles that we experience. Even when the two of us are sitting down in a chair and not exercising, we're constantly being loaded by the constant force of gravity. So as soon as you go into space, your bones actually will start leaching calcium, and you'll start experiencing a loss of bone density, and your muscles will start atrophying because you're just not using them in the same way that they're used to throughout our entire lives, throughout really our whole evolution as humans. So in order to prevent that from having very serious consequences, we need to load the bones and muscles, and we do that by exercising in space.
It would seem to me that another thing you need to be able to do is just simply get along well with people, because you're going to be in such close quarters with people day in and day out. So are you judged when they're selecting you? Are you judged on how well you get along with others, or your personalities that go into the selection process?
We have a buzzword for it now at NASA called expeditionary skills. But really, it's just how to play nicely with others. It's the same kind of thing that that parents teach their kids every day. And I think it is really that simple. But it's something that, you know, we don't always think about in all the things that we do. We do select people with that in mind now. So it doesn't necessarily matter if you're a hotshot pilot or that you're the best at whatever you do. If you're not also a good person who people like being around, you're probably not going to get selected to be an astronaut anymore.
And that's astronaut Jessica Meir, a native of Caribou. She'll take her first space flight this fall and work on board the International Space Station. And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org and join us tomorrow on Maine Calling at 1 o'clock for a conversation about homesteading in Maine. I'm Nora Flaherty.